Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Fringe Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Dr. John Andrus. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about Thabo Mbeki, how presidents are elected, ANC defections in the Western Cape, and yet more drama inside the MK party. So let's start off with our first one. Over the weekend, while speaking at an event connected to the National Dialogue in the Eastern Cape, former President Thabo Mbeki was holding forth, as he often does these days, on a variety of issues. And one of the things he suggested that the National Dialogue should push for is that the way presidents are elected in South Africa should be changed. Now, I don't entirely understand exactly what the alternative that he's suggesting is, but I suspect it is a more direct election of presidents. He said, when Parliament said I must become president, they did not have a clue what I was capable of doing, and they never asked. He said, this is something the National Dialogue should address. He also gave his thoughts on the state of the country, and as a former leader and president of the ANC, this is rather damning. He said, when I was asked to comment about South Africa at 30 years, I said we need an intervention. The economy is in crisis. Politics is in crisis. We have a crime and corruption crisis. Even our relations with the rest of the continent are in crisis. There is nothing that does not say crisis. He said he looked at the manifestos of all the political parties last year and concluded that politicians did not have the answers. It was time for South Africans to provide the answers. And by answers, I don't mean political promises. Answers can only come from the people, not political parties. So, John, my first thought here is Mbeki is sounding an awful lot about like someone who's about to start a political party, because that's what they all sound like before they start a political party. Although I'm not sure if he's actually going to do that, but what's your take on this? Okay, let's start off first with this idea of electing presidents directly. Do you think that that would actually make a meaningful impact on the way we do things in South Africa?
So there's a lot to unpack in this brief article that we looked at. And you've covered some of the points. We can start with the one about the way in which presidents are elected. And maybe for framing, what I would bring up here is that we saw some polling results a week or two ago that suggested that 49% of South Africans would like military rule in South Africa. And I think that former President Mbeki's comments are sort of inspired by the same sentiment as the people who give that answer to, you know, who would you like to run the country? And that is the sense of frustration at the way things are going and the desire just for somebody to do something useful about it. And I think what Mr. Mbeki is saying here is, you know, currently the presidents we've got are beholden to their parties. They get to the top on the basis of certain skills, characteristics, abilities, aptitudes, which might not be aligned with the skills that you actually need to run a country. And wouldn't it be better if we had some mechanism for identifying really capable people and then, you know, letting them run the country, and then things will get better? And I understand where this desire comes from, but I also share your skepticism about whether changing the way we elect leaders is going to change that. To take the example of Mr. Mbeki's suggestion here, you know, he points out that he didn't get asked, you know, what are you capable of? What can you do for the country? Before he became president, he sort of just became it. But how would such a process, what would it look like? I don't think there's a useful way of designing such a process. You know, imagine having, I don't know, an interview panel that assesses 10 candidates, and those candidates have to submit their CVs and show what they've achieved so far. And then you pick like the one person, you can do it.
Perhaps headed by a former president, maybe.
Yes, exactly. So ultimately, you know, the mechanism we currently have is in a way the right mechanism, I think, which is that, you know, voters every 5 years get the opportunity to choose who's going to lead the country. And they try to find somebody who will do a good job, ideally, you know, you hope. And if they do, then that party gets rewarded. And that's the incentive on the inside of the party to pick the right person. So, you know, you don't have a panel or anything like that, but you've got a party that wants to win elections. To win elections, it has to do things that voters want to see getting done. And that is how the democratic mechanism is meant to work. So that's what I would stick with. The one proviso here would be that We are very process focused in South Africa, and everything takes inordinately long, because you have to check with all sorts of constituencies inside your party, outside the party, in parliament, and it's hard for clear decisions to be made. And then in such moments, we might look with some envy to the United States, where there's a proper presidential system, and the president, if he's a person like Donald Trump, or some of his predecessors for that matter, can use executive orders to get stuff done pretty quickly. And that can be to the good or to the bad, but at least stuff is moving, things are moving. And I think that is where we sense the frustration amongst South Africans and also amongst former presidents like Mr. Mbeki. Nick.
Yeah, there's a more theoretical question around this about, South Africa is mostly a parliamentary system where the parliament is the sort of the center of things, and our president is elected from parliament. And we're a bit weird in that we have a president who's both the head of state and the head of government and is elected from parliament, which is like a parliamentary system and a presidential system sort of stitched together in an awkward way. And yeah, I don't always know if that is the best way of doing things. I'm not a huge fan of presidential systems, but I'm not sure if having this weird hybrid is great either. And a purely, if I was kind of designing the whole system from scratch, I might say let's be purely one or purely the other. But the ultimate thing is, are people holding politicians accountable? Are intellectuals putting good ideas into the space? Is civil society and business fighting actually for their interests of people that they represent, or their business interests, or whatever? If those things aren't happening, you can have whatever system you want in the world, and it's not actually going to fix the problem. Expedited shortcuts and new schemes to quickly turn things around here or there, I think, is not the real way. The reality is, we need to sort of slowly move through the system and replace bad ideas with good ideas, which is not particularly sexy, but that's the only thing we can do, I think.
And I think what I also noticed, and I sort of appreciated about Mr. Mbeki's comments, is so he's very forthright in pointing out the problems. And I know that when we were doing presentations to corporate clients, our keynote briefing 2 years, 3 years ago, we collected a whole series of newspaper headlines, and like every single one had the word crisis in it. There was the water crisis, the electricity crisis, the health crisis, the crime crisis. Like every single thing was in crisis. And I think it has actually slightly improved since then. So things have gotten a bit better than they were 2, 3 years ago. Load shedding has got better. That's actually the main thing, I guess. Maybe we with the GNU, we've got a bit more hope of improvement than we had 2, 3 years ago. But still, there's a lot of crisis going on. Something I must add to that there is that we're looking for a magic bullet type solution. So we're saying, let the experts design the perfect system to fix crime and security, or this, that, and the other. And I
Or not
don't quite
even
think that works. Yeah.
just the experts. We must have some sort of great mass democratic upswelling of like, there's just like someone out there who's got a genius idea. It's not that simple. There isn't, as you said, there's no magic bullet. You can't change one thing and then everything will just work. As much as getting rid of BEE would be an incredible benefit to the country, it's not going to fix all of our problems in one go.
Yeah, that's true. And I do think that there's this notion of emergent order. And I think that that's kind of where I find myself sitting on the spectrum, so to speak, which is that top down, completely designed by a group, solutions typically don't work because reality is too complex and too dynamic. There's too many moving parts. You just can't do it. So you've actually got to let people get on with designing solutions by themselves. But what you can do is create the right conditions for people to do that usefully. Yeah. And yeah, Nick.
So, on this last point of Mbeki saying everything's in a crisis, what do you think this? I mean, this surely is yet another sign that the ANC sort of shine has fallen apart. I'm pretty sure that Mbeki has been pretty bitter about how things were for a long time, but the fact that he's very bluntly saying this kind of thing now, I mean, it's basically attacking the government. What do you think, it actually says about the politics of the country at the moment?
So here I think that what I imagine President Mbeki's state of mind to be is one of bitter disappointment at how things have turned out. You know, during his presidency, we had higher economic growth rates, economy was creating jobs, public finances were in a better shape, South Africa was more popular, and he was able to design this notion of the African Renaissance and, you know, things being on an upward trajectory. And it was an ambitious and lofty vision. And, you know, it was, I think, a good idea in that sense. And the degree of under-delivery and underperformance since over the past 15 years or so has just been devastating. And, you know, for that reason, I think when he criticizes outcomes, I do think that he's distancing himself from the current iteration of the ANC. I don't think he endorses, you know, what the Zuma presidency produced or what the Ramaphosa presidency has produced. I think he's saying that's very different to how things were under President Mandela, under myself, when you know there seemed to be a path towards improvement, and we've completely lost the plot. Like where are we? What are we doing? We need to figure out how to fix this. And I think that's what inspires statements like this.
Yeah, no, definitely. And while you know. As you say, there are many things one could point out about the Mbeki presidency that would make me not a fan of him. But in terms of economic growth, that was something he did far better than has happened since then. And that was something that really helped to smooth over so many of the other rough edges in his presidency. Yeah. Okay, let's move on to our next story. The DA held a press conference this morning in Cape Town, and it sort of framed it as news of great importance to the nation. I think it a little bit underdelivered on the result when what the actual news was announced, but still worth talking about. And that is that the ANC secretary Neville Delport in the Western Cape has defected from the party and has joined the DA. This was announced by Helen Zille at a media briefing this morning. Helen said that Delport's defection to the DA was the tip of the iceberg, and the party welcomed other ANC members during the media briefing. Delport said that his decision to leave the ANC was not a difficult one, and that it was fueled by the ANC National Working Committee's recent reconfiguration of the party's leadership structure. So, two things here to mention. One, I wonder what the ANC's election results are going to be in the Western Cape. The party managed about 20% in the last local government election in 2021 in the Western Cape, and about 21%. I would not be surprised if that number drops into the sort of mid or low teens, losing ground to the PA, the DA, and probably, you know, the EFF, maybe even MK a little bit. So firstly, your thoughts on just the ANC in opposition. And secondly, this comment about the ANC National Working Committee's reconfiguration, that's quite interesting. What's your take on that? Let's start with the second one first.
Yeah, so I think it was the reconfiguration in the Western Cape, as far as I know. And I assume that was in response to continued underperformance politically. You know, so the national government elections were not too great. Local government elections before that weren't too good. I think the ANC has been losing ground for a number of election cycles now. And obviously, if you're managing the party, you're going to try come up with a plan to do something about that. So I think that's what that shuffle is about. Mr. Delport, I think, was not too keen on that and took the opportunity to jump ship to the DA. But I think we can also generalize a little bit away from the specifics of this case to the general state of the ANC and of politics. So what's happening in the Western Cape, I think, is a precursor to what the ANC is going to experience in the rest of the country. And that is that the glue binding its members to the party is weakening. And in the past, you know, it would be, there was a very strong sense of loyalty towards the party, and you know, the blood running through your veins would be black, red, and black, green, and gold. But now, as the party keeps going down and its reputation is suffering through numerous corruption allegations, revelations, other parties become maybe more attractive. And especially if they look like they're being successful, you know, the DA is doing things quite well, is producing results, is doing well in elections. So maybe as a politician, you're going to see your future in the DA rather than in the ANC. And this weakening of the ties that bind the ANC together internally is one of the threats to the ANC's continued existence and performance. That's, again, a tough challenge for them to solve, because how do you keep people attached to your brand if your brand is suffering so badly? I think it's going to be a challenge for the Secretary General and other leaders in the party to solve.
Yeah, there's this famous quote from Osama bin Laden that when people see a strong horse and a weak horse, they will by nature like the strong horse. Mm. And a lot of politicians, and even some voters too, really, I think, are not that ideological. Most voters are not ideological, right? They sort of just go with who kind of captures the spirit of they think will speak to the issues they care about. Identity and ideology can sometimes get mixed together. So sometimes it can look like voters are ideological when they actually aren't. But generally speaking, the ANC right now is very much in the position of the weak horse. And, you know, winning, it's no surprise that the moment the DA stopped going up in its vote shares, that it had lots of internal squabbles and people breaking away and, you know, the leadership being fired or resigning from the party and just kind of chaos breaking through. And that when the party looked like it started to win again or at least recover its sort of momentum a bit, suddenly, you know, the DA seems much more united. And it's exactly the same with the ANC, is I think as the party sort of loses steam, it's only more incentive for everyone to jump off the ship until something very dramatic happens to turn it around. And that the Western Cape has been the prime example of that, where the ANC has just sort of disintegrated into pieces from once, you know, being one of the biggest, if not the biggest party in the province. Originally speaking, which is something that people forget, you know, that when the DA won its majority in the Western Cape in 2009, ANC was getting, you know, about a third of the vote, and the DA only just won the province. I think on the provincial ballot, it got 51%, but on the national ballot, it actually got 48%. So, you know, this decline has been. It's not sort of foreordained. It happened, you know, very progressively.
And one thing that I wonder is if at the national level, if we see an improvement in the economy, if that will maybe halt the decline of the ANC's fortunes or maybe even turn it around. You know, so if we see a bit of economic growth happening, a bit of optimism returning to consumers and to businesses, that might help the party. But,
You see, that would have been true in the past. But I wonder whether that still is going to be true, because I think once a party sort of loses its shine and people decide on a narrative about it, it can be very hard to turn things around. So I think the turnaround would have to be quite dramatic to reverse some of these trends. And you do sometimes see this with parties as they actually begin to experience some sort of economic turnaround and things start to go in the right direction. But because it happens too late, it's over. And I think in the last attempt to reform the Argentinian economy before Milei resulted was kind of a little bit like this in some ways.
Under Macri, yeah.
Yes, under Macri.
And then the question is also who gets to take the credit for it. You know, so while the ANC was still the sole party, the only party running the country, it could take full credit for any, you know, good things that happened. But now that's a bit more difficult to sell.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's move on to our last topic for today, although if we have some time, I might sneak one thing in at the end. Mkhonto Sizwe Party, Jacob Zuma's political vehicle, has yet again had another sort of mysterious, in the middle of the night, leadership shuffle. They've had so many now. This person comes in, this person goes out. General secretaries of the party are appointed and removed because MK is a profoundly unstructured and undemocratic organization. Essentially, it seems to be that Jacob Zuma can appoint and fire people entirely by whim. Relatively recently, Colleen Mokgabule, who is the formerly, I don't know even where to start with the political career. She was a member of COPE and was made the council speaker in the city of Johannesburg when she then defected from the COPE. She led the charge on defecting COPE from the DA-led coalition to the ANC-led coalition in Joburg. Then she left COPE to create the South African Rainbow Alliance, which then got nowhere in the last elections. And then she joined MK Party and very quickly rose through the ranks to become an MP and then the chief whip of the MK Party caucus. And now she seems to be out of that job around about midnight. Last night, Jacob Zuma announced via WhatsApp that she was to be removed as party leader, as chief whip in parliament. And she was, within the next few hours before the sun rose, kicked off of all the WhatsApp groups. And possibly this suggests that she may have been removed from the party entirely. She's being replaced by Des van Rooyen, the infamous weekend special who Zuma appointed for one weekend as the finance minister before the market reaction, you know, cowed him into reversing that decision. And Zuma described Des van Rooyen as demonstrating loyalty, integrity, and dedication. The party assures its supporters and the broader public that the new leadership in parliament will enrich the work of the caucus, sharpen its political focus, and enhance its ability to represent the will of the people without compromise, said the MK Party spokesperson Ndela. John, does this actually mean anything? MK, you know, changes leaders every 20 seconds. Is this actually going to hurt the party? What's your take on that?
Oh, I think it definitely means something. And the first thing that comes to mind, especially when you were focusing very much on the midnight aspect and the early hours of the morning and so on, was 1934 and the night of the long knives in Nazi Germany, you know, where it was a bit more dramatic than just being kicked off the WhatsApp group, because, you know, that's when proper purges happen and people got killed. So at least that isn't happening in South Africa, and thank God for that. But nonetheless, you know, this is a leader who's asserting his authority over his party once again in a very hard way, very, very quick, very decisive, very ruthless. And one must ask, you know, what effect does that have on the remaining members of the party? If you're a member of the top leadership of the MK party, how well do you sleep? How safe do you feel in your bed? Do you turn your notifications off at night, or do you check your WhatsApp even at midnight? So I think there must be a certain sense of fear pervasive in the party. And that, you know, we would think that is a problem for its stability and longevity, because if everybody's scared, then it's going to be hard to make the party work properly. It probably works for a while, because as long as the leader is still feared enough and his instructions are obeyed, then he can get a lot done. But once he is no longer revered, feared, or respected, or no longer around, then what do all of these top leaders do? And it may well be that then, you know, we do see a night of the...
Right, we lost John there for a second, but he's back now. Yeah, so I think this is once again an advert for why political parties do actually need structures. These are sort of thought of, I think, by people particularly outside of politics as being a little bit arcane and weird. You know, why do you have all these branches and this structure here and that leader there and all that? But the problem is some of the newer parties, you know, MK, Action SA, the PA, they look like they're doing well because they have a leader who has this just total control of the party. And if there's infighting, he can just, you know, crush his opponents. There's always, you know, clear appointments and an idea of who's going to get into power, that kind of thing. There isn't lots of leaking internally because, you know, everyone is kind of kept on the same page by the leader being able to just chop anyone he doesn't like. Downside to that is that firstly, you stifle talent, because the primary focus of every person underneath the leader then is to suck up to the leader, because that's the only thing their job depends on. And the second thing is that you don't have proper stability. If, you know, if you're elected, so in the DA or the ANC, you get elected to a position and then you are in that position and it's very difficult to remove you. and there's some sort of stability there and continuity. In MK, Jacob Zuma wakes up one morning and decides that you're a counter-revolutionary, and then, you know, that there goes your party membership, as many people have found out from Floyd Chivambuta now, Ms. Makagule. So, yeah, just one of those things that often gets overlooked and I think is kind of important. But as you say, you know, this is another indication that MK in some ways is a bit of a flash in the pan. They may hold on to their vote share, and that's a very powerful, you know, that's what the third biggest party in the country, that's a very powerful chunk of the vote they've got. But it's not quite taking national government. It's not storming the beaches. And I think until they get some of these structures more stable, it's going to be very difficult to do that. Particularly if Jacob Zuma is not around to, you know, shout at everyone and keep them all in line.
So sort of add a couple of things there, Nikit. One is that I think another problem that arises out of this style of leadership is that it creates, it probably reduces honesty within the party, because you're going to be scared to tell the leader what is really going on, what's really happening, you know, what you think should happen, what should be done, because you might get kicked out. So you're going to shut your mouth, go along with what the leader says, and hope for the best. That's point one. Point two is that you create a single point of failure, right? So if everybody's dependent on the leader and the leader screws up, then everything goes downhill. Yeah. And that's going to be a huge problem. And in a way, this also ties us back
to the EFF.
Yeah, exactly. And in a way, this ties us back to our first story, because, you know, imagine if we had a sort of semi-dictatorial system, a benevolent dictator, or a directly elected president with vast ranging powers. You've got the single point of failure. You have probably the honesty problem, and you don't have sufficient checks and balances. So, yeah, I think these systems do have their weaknesses, even though temporarily they probably look like they're quite sound for a while, just as the 1,000-year Reich also looked quite sound for a while, about what was it, 6 years or so,
until it very suddenly wasn't.
Yes. Well, yes, I guess I shouldn't just count 1939 to 45, so I'll count 33 to 45. The 1,000-year Reich was a 12-year Reich, yes.
Yes, a little bit short of the goal there, but, you know, just not so everyone meets their KPIs.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, very last thing before we close, we've only got a few minutes left. John, you recently had an interesting discussion with a foundation that Thabo Mbeki, I believe, has quite a big role in, where you were interviewed by Dr. Ngozi, formerly of the EFF. Do you want to tell us just very briefly a little bit about that?
That was a very interesting experience. So it was an invitation from the Thabo Mbeki Foundation, which has created a new podcast series called the African Renaissance Podcast, which you can find on YouTube. It's got high production value, so really nicely done. And it was a very interesting experience engaging with Mbuyiseni Ndlozi. He's a very warm, very charismatic person. I think also somebody who's intellectually curious, who reads a lot, who's interested in the world and trying to understand the world. And that made it, I think, a very worthwhile endeavor speaking to him. I saw in the comments below that show also that a lot of people commented that it was good to see this sort of discussion happening, because in much of our political debate and discourse, it all seems a bit superficial or shouty or echo chambery. But in this case, there were two people who disagreed on quite a lot of things, I suppose, but were at least able to talk about those things in a civil manner. And probably the country needs some more of that. So, yeah, go and check it out.
Yeah, go check that out, the African Renaissance podcasts. You can go check out, he also did an interview with Thabo Mbeki, was the first episode, but John was the second episode. So yeah, lots of good stuff in there. Okay, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. We hope you found the show fascinating today, as we always endeavor to make it. And we shall see you tomorrow on The Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a wonderful day. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.